Chapter 4. The next time I awoke, it was under a vast canopy of stars, damp, bruised, and in pain. Still, I gasped foremost in surprise at still being alive. My last recollected image hadn't been all that promising. After the ship didn't answer, and the Lycoms called my bluff, what else could I do but wing it? Starting with the very first thing that came to mind, the Colonel Bogie March was followed by a brief rendition of I Got Rhythm, which segued into a blues version of that ancient, venerated earth melody, Zippity-Doo-Dah, attended by every sound effect I could muster with hand in armpit. Slack-jawed, the four Lycoms had stared in astonishment while I moved on through a half dozen of my best animal calls, then a syncopated chant of the Ballad of Eskimo Nell, in some faint hope they'd like the raunchy bits. Or else, perhaps, that sheer tedium would put them to sleep. No such luck. Of the four of them, the two laconic Lycom henchlupines had simply stared with glazed expressions, and while Lorg seemed willing to give me points for effort, the giant leader simply glared. At last, Besh told Lorg, I guess you're right after all. This meat's no good. I'll help you throw it out. With that, four huge creatures, each about the size and density of a Harley space scooter, buried me under a blurry avalanche of hair and burlap. In fact, I must have made a good account of myself during the brief fight, since it lasted longer and was even more painful than I expected. Finally, as the world spun and I blacked out, the last words I heard were, Let's toss him to the Zooms if they want him so bad. Pondering later, as consciousness returned, I didn't much like the sound of those words, even in recollection. At the moment, though, I had other worries as I lay in the dark, sprawled on my back on a cold, hard surface. No bones seemed broken, but I hurt all over. Stars could be seen overhead, occulted by the outlines of clouds and tree branches. It was damn cold. Worse yet, my uniform was torn. That was bad. Circuitry woven into the fibers was essential to communicating with my crewmates in orbit. Wincing at the effort, I pressed my collar tab anyway and tried to transmit. My voice warbled and scritched like something made of tin. This is Ship's Advisor Montessori calling. Calling Clever Gamble. Come in, Clever Gamble. Do you read? No answer. The nanos in my ears remained silent, though I couldn't rule out the possibility that Besh and his boys had knocked them loose along with half my fillings. Maybe it would help if I sat up and smoothed some of the kinks out of my abused shirt. I pushed up to my elbows and for the first time got a glimpse of my surroundings. My call to the ship trailed off as I made out rows of grayish-white forms, mostly rectangular, arrayed in rows that vanished into the gloom in all directions. Some of the slabs stood upright. Others tilted awkwardly or had toppled on the ground. I now lay upon one of the latter kind, an overturned gravestone. Frissons of panic climbed my back while my gorge churned. It wasn't just your typical queasiness mixed with surprise. When you've spent as much time with demis as I have, you can't help picking up their penchant for superstition. Right then, my sepulchral surroundings didn't make me any more appreciative of the direction life was heading. Then I noticed something else that didn't help my sense of well-being. Of the tombstones I'd thought toppled, several of those nearby seemed deliberately positioned on the ground with metal fixtures along one side. Hinges, I realized unhappily, soon noting that the slab I lay upon came so equipped. Why would anyone put hinges on grave slabs? As if that weren't bad enough, it was about then that a voice murmured out of the darkness behind my back. "There, you see, Sully? He got up. I told you he must be dead. You owe me 5. Shivering, I turned to see 2 humanoids watching me. One leaned against a tall funerary monument, managing to look wryly dapper, despite missing an ear, an eye, and nearly half his scalp. The other one sat atop the same marble shrine, swinging her legs while regarding me with an amused expression on her waxy, overly made-up face. Above them both, a stone figure, both heroic and exaggeratedly masculine, stood frozen in the act of offering sage counsel, chiding with an outstretched finger, probably warning future generations never to stand still long enough to let birds roost on your head, I thought. Or so mused the part of me still capable of detached observation. Symptoms of incipient hysteria were evident. I was starting not to give a damn. "I don't think so, Mulder," the woman answered her companion with a wry smirk. She slid off her perch to land beside him and pointed at me. "He smells too fresh. Besides, ever see Besh and his bunch leave their meat in such good shape?" Mulder winced and touched the missing side of his face. "Well, maybe it wasn't Besh that left it here. Some of the other Lycum bands are still living by the old code. Or maybe the Nomorts dumped him after draining him." The female shook her head as she sauntered toward me. Her gait was strange, at once both graceful and somehow impaired, as if she were a dancer struggling to disguise a progressive neurological disease. Underneath that casual pose, I caught an attitude of intense concentration. She dropped to one knee next to me and reached out toward my neck. I flinched, and her fingers stopped short, then withdrew. She tilted her head, looking at me from both sides, and I caught a pungent, sweet scent, like a 10 times normal dose of tangy perfume. "He's not been sipped by Nomorts, either. He's warm." She rocked back on her haunches, and I sense a normal pulse.
"Oh, yes?"
Mulder shambled closer, and I saw that one of his arms hung nearly useless at his side. He gave off a reek that made me quail back, breathing only through my mouth.
"You're right, Sully," he muttered, crouching over me. "Look at him pant like a scared puppy."
Mulder guffawed so hard that something came loose from his mouth, flying past my left ear. A tooth, I suspected, unhappily.
"So, you're still standard, eh? Still among the true living? Well, enjoy it for a while."
I wasn't sure I liked the sound of that. It seemed time that I took matters in hand, but as I was about to speak, I heard something I liked even less, a rumbling vibration that seemed to come from below my mortuarial platform. There was a scraping clatter, followed by a bang, which jarred the stone from underneath. Both Sully and Mulder stood up and stepped back. I quickly saw that the disturbance wasn't limited to this area. On all sides, tombstones that lay flush with the ground were being nudged, then rocked, and then flung back, swiveling over their hinges to strike the abused earth with loud thuds, revealing yawning black cavities below. I stared as more and more opened, the lids pivoting and banging into dirt, raising small dust clouds until the cemetery hills were pocked with rectangular holes like a carcass pecked over by neat ravens. The nearest neighboring grave lay silent for an agonizing eternity that lasted all too briefly. Then a hand emerged, or something that may once have deserved the name. While I stared transfixed, the stone beneath me rocked once more, this time insistently. "Well, bloody warm," Mulder sneered, "gonna get out of the way, or do you want to join us the fast way?" I turned to see that he and Sully had retaken their perches, climbing up the pedestal of the monument more than 2 meters above the ground. More hands were emerging from graves on all sides, followed by vague shapes that made me deeply grateful for the dark. The tombstone that I sat on received a bang from below that lifted one side several centimeters before slamming back down. I suddenly found the will to move my arms and legs, scrambling to my feet and running past gaping crypts whose residents now emerged like implacable wraiths. Desperately, I dodged around crumbly, foul-smelling pits, evading claw-like hands that reached for me. Whether in aggression or supplication, I didn't tarry to find out. I leaped for the pedestal and managed to get my arms over the stone lip near the cold base of the statue. I was trying to swing my legs up when something brushed my left foot. I tried shaking it off, but a bony grip clamped down on my boot and began dragging me backward. I seemed to recall a sound leaving my throat. I would not be ashamed if anyone called it a whimper. Suddenly, 2 pairs of chill hands seized my arms and yanked me upward. I felt a snap below, and soon thereafter found myself on my feet atop the pedestal, standing next to the statue itself, just under the benevolent arm of the sculpted eminence. "Thank you," I gasped between hasty breaths. This time, Mulder spilled no parts when he laughed.
"Think nothing of it. That's why the tribe has recents like us. Check out the surface before an advent. Older corpies don't like surprises. Makes 'em grumpy."
He nodded downward, and I got an all too good look at the entity who had tried to seize me seconds before. "A zombie," I thought, subvocalizing a word that I'd been avoiding for some time. Shreds of former clothing still draped the cadaverous form, grinning liplessly as it cast about, left and right, searching for something it had lost. It never occurred to the wretched thing, thank God, to look up.
"Excuse me," Mulder said in an amused voice. "I think you've got something our cousin wants back."
As he crouched by my side, I looked down and must have yelped. The woman, Sully, steadied me as Mulder wrestled loose a severed hand that still clamped a hold of my service boot. With a grunting effort, he loosened its grip, holding it warily by the wrist as it slowly writhed, opening and closing clumsily.
"Hey, cuz, here you go. Wear it in health."
He tossed the disembodied appendage down so that it struck the zombie in the chest. After a moment or two, the pathetic, horrible thing bent over to recover the member, fumbling and finally managing to reattach the hand in some way. Backwards, I realized, when it clenched, the poor creature didn't seem to notice. It slobbered through a rictus grin, and I swear the slavering sound seemed almost musical in a strange, chilling way. I wouldn't have expected my nanos to make sense of the noise, but the translator in my left ear offered a best guess interpretation. "Why, thank you, kids, for finding what I had misplaced. How nice to see that courtesy is still extant among today's youth." It was only a rough rendering. The original statement might have been bitterly sarcastic for all I knew. Still, I muttered, "You're welcome," almost involuntarily, as the corpambulist shuffled off to join a horde of risen forms, now shambling in unison through the gloom. "Have a nice evening stroll," I added. The woman, Sully, let go of my arm and stared at me. I turned and abruptly realized something I'd been too tense to notice before, that she was, without a doubt, the loveliest dead person who ever saved my life. To her surprised regard, I could only shrug and repeat what my own instructors used to teach here at the academy as good advice for any occasion. "Well, after all," I told the beautiful zombie, "it never hurts a body to be polite." Sully and Mulder led me to a mausoleum at the far end of the cemetery, where tombs apparently predated the present era of decline in both population and wealth. Lavish marble masonry faced the vaults and sepulchres, adorned with kneeling statuary figures in prayerful poses. On earth, such postures usually illustrated earnest supplication for an afterlife. But I tried to shuck aside any preconceptions. Clearly, to the denizens of 1265 Oxytocin 41C, death was just another phase in a rather complex cycle. The crypt possessed an arching roof like an ancient Greek tholos, under which we sheltered from some intermittent drizzling rain. Beyond a bank of low trees, I could make out lighted skyscrapers less than a kilometer away. I might have been tempted to call them beacons of refuge, but right now I was in no hurry to test the nighttime reactions of trigger-happy guards protecting the standard populace. Standards who were sure to be utterly paranoid if they had any sense at all. In the opposite direction, away from the city lights, a gap in the clouds let moonlight spill across a hilly glade where milled throngs of limping, staggering forms. A distant lowing floated from that place, a creepy, moaning din that sent chills coursing down what remained of my aptly named nervous system. I tried ignoring the zombie sounds as my rescuers, Sully and Mulder, asked questions, and I did my best to answer. Still, my thoughts were elsewhere. What I really wanted desperately was to restore contact with Clever Gamble. Whatever my plight, the well-being of my ship and crewmates came first. Fortunately, the cool weather was reason enough to press my collar against my throat the entire time that I told Mulder and Sully about my predicament, the kidnapping of my comrades from the heart of the Lycum herb, and my subsequent encounter with Lorg and the gang of Besh. Perhaps my shirt was transmitting but not receiving. Anyway, it seemed worth a try. "You were lucky to get away from Besh in one piece," Sully commented. "Either his bunch currently has a full larder, or you did something to put him off his feed." "Hmm," I commented, remembering those last moments under the herb. "My singing has affected people that way on occasion, but I never before owed my survival to that fact." "Anyway," Mulder added as he groomed Sully, much as I'd seen apes do in a zoo, picking through her glossy hair, seeking what I dared not dwell upon. "Anyway, I wouldn't worry about your friends anymore if I was you."
"You wouldn't?"
"Nah. You'll probably be reunited soon."
"Really?"
"Sure. Providing the Lycums left enough of them to animate and didn't put the remains out in the sun. It's not nice, but Besh has been known to do that. Otherwise they'll be along this way soon. I winced at the image. Demi-zombies. It made me shiver. I'm pretty sure Besh never got his hands on my colleagues, and I explained the reaction of Lorg to my questions.
He said what? Sully sneered. That Zooms ambushed your group right in the middle of the herb? Oh, that's rich.
Why's that? Maybe it was some other, tribe of corpambulists. I think he used the term ranks. The two of them looked at each other, and I knew I'd said something important, but they didn't comment.
Look, if I could only ask your leaders...
That's just the point. Zooms have very little of anything you'd call leadership. Sometimes a group will get an idea into their failing brains and go shambling off in some direction to do one thing or another. Settle old scores they vaguely recall from when they were alive, for instance, or surround a house and bang on it to scare everybody inside half to death. And then there are brain smorgs. Those are hard to resist. But the very idea of doing something so organized as an ambush in Lycum country? She shook her head, dismissing the idea as absurd.
Well, what about you? I asked, taking a chance. You and Mulder are, well, recent is the word you used. You still have plenty of,
I almost said life in you, but decided to use other phrasing.
You seem just as bright and astute as anyone not saddled with your, impairment.
Why, what a sweet thing to say. She smiled and turned to her friend. Wasn't that sweet, Mulder?
Mulder grunted and rolled his one eye in its socket. Yeah, real sweet.
But you really don't understand, Sully continued. Recents like us have to stay out of the way, or the older corpses will tear us apart. We smell too fresh, you see. They assign us tasks that take finesse, like dealing with strangers and such. But when it comes to mass action, Zooms tend to follow those even further along than they are.
Farther along?
You know, she said, and pretended to hold her nose without actually touching it.
Rule by the ripest, Mulder summarized.
Oh, I see.
Ripe makes might,
Sully corrected.
Only the decayed may decree,
Mulder pondered.
Which means the really rank hath privileges.
Uh-huh, and victory goes to the spoiled.
Then corruption empowers, I interjected on impulse.
They paused. Then Sully replied with a grin, Necrolutely!
Rot on, Mulder enthused. Power to the putrid!
And for a second I feared he was about to offer me a high slap handshake. But he settled for raising a clenched fist. I relaxed, having already that evening learned a new meaning to the expression, Gimme Five. We sat in silence for a time, listening as the zombie singing on that far hillside coalesced, taking on a complex rhythm and eerie tonality I had never heard in all my travels. I let go of the throat mic at last. It seemed futile. And anyway, my neck was getting raw. There had never been the slightest sign that anybody in orbit heard me. Something was terribly wrong, and I was going to need help ever to find out what happened to my crewmates in the slurry party, let alone the clever gamble herself. I could feel my alertness start to fade away. It had, after all, been a damn rough day. Or two, or three. The music of the dead had a somnolent effect, drawing me downward toward unconscious realms, whether I liked it or not. I had no will any longer to resist, as a deep languor spread across my limbs.
I have it, Sully announced abruptly. By now, she had traded places and was grooming Mulder, a process I chose not to watch too closely. Still, I managed to turn and regard her eyes, which seemed to shine at me with genuine pleasure.
Have what?
Mulder asked, clearly concerned and trying to squirm around to see what she had found in his scalp.
I mean, I've got an idea. I know where we can take our guest in the morning, if the weather's nice. We'll guide him to town and introduce him to Professor Ping.
Mulder sat up suddenly, too suddenly, leaving a patch of Harry's scalp in Sully's hand, which she quickly hid from view.
Of course, he cried. Ping is the thing. You'll see, stranger, he'll get you straightened out in no time.
And if he doesn't, perish the thought, Mulder added with a leer, or if the guards or Viggies or Nomorts get you first, well, no harm in trying. You'll just wind up right back here in Necropolis, and we can show you how to fit right into the rot race.
I suppose I thanked them. I guess I must have made all the right polite sounds, but I was so exhausted, I had no strength to ask any further questions.
Sometimes, students, in your travels, there will come occasions when you simply have to hope for the best and put your fate in the hands of strangers. I had never been in stranger hands than I was that night. Still, the rule held. Anyway, what choice had I except to trust my instinctive feeling that these two would protect me until dawn? I drifted off, lying upwind of my two deceased friends under a marble mausoleum canopy. As minutes elongated, the crooning from the hillside zombie gathering seemed to come together with compelling urgency and a kind of unexpectedly weird beauty, blending into the equally unalive yet animate singing of the wind. I recall at the time thinking vaguely about a certain radio station, one still using binaural no-pix format that I used to listen to as a boy. The net jockeys on that channel always bragged that they played only contemporary tunes, never classical, or oldies, or crow rock, or warp zither. Just the latest stuff. No music by dead guys. That was their motto. But here I was, listening to a veritable song of the perished, a melody with spirit, with soul. And it was the very latest thing. The rhythms were unique. The harmonies splendid. Decomposers were sublime.